Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, July 1st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it. Print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and repeated listening to those audio files can serve as a tutorial and aid you in getting building quicker and more efficient progress in turning that tool into a productive resource in your life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because of the benefits it provides us in our lives and because it frequently leads people to have comments or questions or answers or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. You can also give us a call if you're listening live. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number, you can listen to the show, and if you have a comment or a question, you can press 1 on your phone, and it'll put the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code and turn on the microphone. So we encourage people to do that, and I like to remind people that even if I'm in the middle of a monologue, I'm encouraging comments or questions. If you press 1 on your phone, I will either turn on the microphone nearly immediately or when it feels to be appropriate in terms of the flow of the material that's being discussed at the time. So please feel free to raise a hand, 563-999-3581, and let us know how we can be of service, because that is the primary intention we have with this work. It's primary intention that Michael and Jeannie have for maintaining the website, for maintaining the Mind Shifters radio show, which, to my mind, is pretty impressive. 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, for 11-plus years. And the intention behind it is to be of service. It has not brought them money. It has cost them money. They're paying their own money to have the Blog Talk Radio account that gives them access to do these shows. They're paying their own money for the building and maintaining of a website and hosting it. And so you can assist in that process by letting us know how more directly we can be of service to you. And if you happen to have financial resources and benefit from this work, you can go to whyagain.org and click on the donate button. So it's been a rather intense few weeks in a variety of ways, and we had another support group last night, which was less intense because I specifically chose something to for us to watch, an hour plus of material to watch that was not even close to politics or any of the hot topics that are out in the world today. And they're basically, the subject was us as human beings and what are our abilities, what are our resources. Now, the people that created the little mini docuseries we were watching labeled it Superhumans, In Search of Superhumans. And my take on it was, it's not so much in search of superhumans, it's just in search of what is our potential as humans and how much of it are we activating when we fall into the habit of who we think we are and we just keep living the same kinds of behaviors and actions in life over and over and over again, which is wonderful if we enjoy it. But if we find ourselves complaining about it or upset about it or feeling overwhelmed by it, then it's not such a good thing to just keep spending our time, intelligence, money, and energy in the same way day after day. Apparently, Dr. Joe Dispenza has a book out that has something in the title about, you know, how to break the habit of who you are. And that was part of our discussion. I'm trying to look up very quickly this the titles listed for Dr. Joe Dispenza. And the one that the woman was talking about, the title of the book is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And we are, I gave the a talk years ago at a Unity church where it was a talk about this very thing. I said, and near the beginning of the talk, I said, I'm here as a bearer of bad news. I'm here to tell you that you have an addiction you didn't know you had. And then I went on to talk about how most of us, some would argue all of us, are addicted to the familiar. And so you, who you think you are, the habit of being you, the way you have your morning and midday and nighttime routines, is a habit for you. And it's the habit of being yourself. And that's great if that brings you joy, if that lights you up. David White has a quote from one of his poems. David White's W-H-Y-T-E. And I might get a few words wrong here, but the essence of the quote was, sometimes it takes the darkness of the night and the stillness of your own thoughts to help you realize that anything which does not bring you fully alive is too small for you. And when we have a habit of thoughts and behaviors and rituals of the day, and we're not happy with our lives, people like Joe Dispenza and people like David White and people like Dr. Michael Rice and Guy Finley and Krishnamurti and the intelligence behind the Way of Mastery are there to help us understand that when we are not happy with our lives, we can talk directly to the person who's creating the stuff we're not happy with, because it's us. Right? From the very first lesson in the Way of Mastery, it is highlighting for us the observation that each and every one of us creates our experience of life, and nothing outside of us creates that experience. Now, there are things outside of us that we need to respond to that we don't have control over, and yet our experience of those things comes from inside of us, comes from how we choose to interpret and respond to those events, far more than the events themselves, far more than the flow of life itself. Far more important than that is, how do I choose to interpret and respond to the flow of life? Because that, and that alone, is the primary driver of my experience. So, if you're stuck in a rut, Way of Mastery would be happy to introduce you to the creator of your rut and the creator of your experience of being in the rut. It's you. It's your choice of where you're directing your mind energy. And that's true for all of us, and it's the bad news and the good news kind of thing, because the bad news is we don't have anybody to blame, and the good news is we can get out of it ourselves when we're ready. We can recreate an entirely different experience of life whenever we're ready. It does take some reworking of us. It takes some, as Joe Dispenza would say, you know, breaking the habit of being yourself. It takes the willingness to do things differently, which is exactly what the Way of Mastery was giving us. So we've been working with the Way of Mastery since January 10th of this year, and fairly slowly, methodically, going through these lessons at least twice for each lesson, except the meditation in lesson 11. And as we began lesson 13, that begins the book titled The Way of Transformation. And in the first two lessons in the Way of Transformation, the book tells us in a variety of different ways, repeatedly, that in order for there to be transformation, we must choose to use time differently, our time. We must choose to break the habit of being ourselves. We can't continue to do the same thing we've always done and expect any different results than we've always gotten. And it's okay if we choose to keep doing the same thing over and over again. There is acceptance, there is allowance, there is surrender, there is peace on the other side. the consciousness that helped create this work, the Way of Mastery, the entities behind it, whether they're in physical body or not, they will hold on to their peace. They will send loving energy your way as long as you want to do whatever you want, whether you want to join them in that peace or you want to keep struggling using your time the way you've always used it, which has resulted in upset, fear, sadness, anger, hurt, guilt, shame, the ideal of victimhood. You can use your time that way. You can use your mind energy that way. And it'll not only be allowed, it will be accepted and welcomed. And yet each moment, each brand new present moment is as ripe a time for you to choose enlightenment and liberation, etc., whenever you are ready to do so, whenever you choose to do so. So speaking of choices, the Course in Miracles, which we read last year on this internet show, talks quite a bit about love and fear. Love, the only thing that's real, and fear, which is false. And the idea that you can choose in any moment to choose love over fear is actually one of their definitions of a miracle. A miracle is simply a time, a moment, an event where someone has chosen love over fear. There's also a line from the Course in Miracles that says, there is no place so sacred on this earth as the place where an ancient hatred has become a present love. So, lesson 15 is titled, Love or Fear? The choice is yours. And the text reads, we come forth with great joy to abide with you, to share our love for you in celebration that we are but one mind and one heart. For those who choose to release all illusions and journey to the heart of the Creator, there can only be oneness, brotherhood, sisterhood, eternally. And there can only be one purpose and one goal. There can only be Christ expressing the mind of the Creator. Therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you in this lesson. We would ask that you set aside the roar and the din of the world and to simply hold the thought in the mind for just the briefest of moments that right now you need not be concerned for anything. The world you have dreamt into being, simply to experience it, that world can be placed upon a shelf. That in this now, there is simply this experience. Focus on your willingness to prepare a place for us and to hear subtle vibrations translated as thoughts into the words on the page that can direct the heart toward the soul, that can direct the soul toward the spirit, and that can direct the spirit into awakening fully as the presence of the thought of love in form. You are the extension of the creative energy expressing in form. You are the fundamental creative energy expressing in form. You are a miracle of life. You did not create yourself. You do not know when you were created. You don't know how you digest the food you eat. You don't know how your body moves when you decide to move it. It is a mystery. You are a mystery. You are part of the mystery of life. And when you choose to tune into that level of observation, it instantaneously transforms your experience of life. When you focus on the roar and the din of the world, it's very difficult to shift that experience. But therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you in this lesson, and we know it's important for us to ask you to set aside the roar and the din of the world. Because if you don't, even for the briefest of moments, you can't step back, gain the proper perspective to realize if you're hearing these words, you are a miracle of life expressing in form. You are part of the divine mind of the Creator as a spark of consciousness. And if you step back into that experience and observation, it transforms your experience of life instantaneously. So we're asked to focus on your willingness to prepare a place for us and to hear the subtle vibrations translated as thoughts into the words on the page that can be spoken so that you hear them. But they can be there to direct the heart toward the soul, to direct the soul toward the spirit, and to direct the spirit into awakening fully as the presence of the thought of love in form. For this is what you are made to be, and this is what you are eternally. Regardless of the vibrations of thoughts that you allow to make a home in your mind, that's just temporary. It does not change the truth of your nature. You have a term in your legal system called temporary insanity. The lawyer says, "My client is not guilty. It was just temporary insanity." Rest assured, that is exactly how it is in the cosmic dimensions of your being. Your Creator knows that given perfectly free will, you have elected at times to be temporarily insane. Knowing this, no judgment has been passed, and you have never been made wrong by your Creator. You have never failed to create and attract precisely those most beautiful lessons that have triggered for you what you most need to learn and what you most need to feel. In each moment, you exist in an exquisite perfection of your own making and your own collaboration with one another. Imagine that. Imagine if you could step back and recognize every day, every moment. You could choose the interpretation that says, this life, these events, these energies, these people with whom I'm led to interact are the perfect set of forces, events, energies, emotions, thoughts, awarenesses, ripples of energy through creation for me to wake up to my connection to all things, to wake up to the false beliefs that I've clung to wake up to the bushel baskets of guilt and shame and blame and negativity and thoughts of self-loathing that I hold on to which do only the job of obstructing my view, so I don't get to see the truth of who I am. So I don't get to step back and experience myself as the miracle of life expressing in form. So I don't get to see that all that's asked of me moment to moment is to participate fully in creation. This book keeps saying to bless creation, to extend the energy of love in creation. But imagine, just sit and listen to how this bounces off of your conditioning, your Western mind cultured conditioning, when it says, you have never failed to create and attract precisely those most beautiful lessons that have triggered for you what you most need to learn and what you most need to feel. Just let your mind respond to that. Just notice whether that you welcome that lovingly or you fight against that thought that you have never failed to create or attract precisely the most beautiful lessons that have been triggered for you. I have several people this week alone who have lives that at one level, if they step back and look at them, they can see they are very fortunate. They live in a country where there's no war going on. They're living in a part of the country where there's low crime. They live in relative abundance in terms of they've got a house that's climate controlled and a nice car and plenty of food and internet and all these things. At one level, they can see that, and at another level, they are completely overwhelmed. They are miserable. They're judging things as bad and wrong. Whether they're focused on the world events or the politics they're seeing on the news, or they're focused on the health of friends and family, and they're actually creating for themselves misery. And occasionally they step back, either they're participating in group or they're one of my patients in a session, and they step back and they notice it and they say, I know that I should be focusing on the gratitude for all the good that I have, and yet I'm stuck like a dog chewing on a bone, and it's a massive bone and I may never get done chewing on it. Or I focus on the negativity, and I focus on what I want that I don't have, and I focus on how things should be rather than how they are. Notice what we do with our minds. That's what we're being called to observe in the way of mastery from the very first lesson. We are choosing what we do with our mind energy, and that is the dynamic force that creates our experience of life. Notice what your mind energy does when you hear somebody say, you have never failed. You've never failed to create and attract precisely the most beautiful lessons that have been triggered for you. And what you must need to learn and what you most need to feel. In each moment, you exist in exquisite perfection of your own making and your own collaboration with one another. It's fascinating. I had somebody, a story that pops into mind was I had a new patient not too long ago who came in and was talking about how he's been getting more and more depressed over the past year, and as he gets more depressed, he gets more angry. And so he and his wife were out for a walk, and there was a neighbor in the neighborhood who was out there working in his yard, and polite greetings turned into political talk. And the next thing you know, my patient, you know, he's not proud of it. He's coming in to try and get help to stop this kind of thing. But the next thing he knows, he's yelling, swearing, name-calling, and challenging that person to a physical fight, describing how he's going to beat the tar out of them. This paragraph says he and his neighbor were creating that perfectly to bring to each of them what they most need to feel and to heal and to learn. Now, you can look at it another way and say that's ridiculous and that's horrible and that should never happen. But if you spin that kaleidoscopic wheel of interpretation and you look at it from as many different angles as you can, one of them is going to be, hey, guess what? He didn't actually get into a fist fight with that guy, and it stirred up so much embarrassment in him and so much discomfort that he ended up getting an appointment with a psychologist. And if that psychologist that he ends up with isn't good enough to help him or doesn't have the right tools for him, he'll probably move on and find another one. So we never know what the spark is going to be that lights the fire of in us. But this book, these works, these deep spiritual teachings are asking us to just experiment with what would it be like to look through the lens at your life that says, it's perfect, this is a lesson, I'm here to learn, I'm here to play and have fun. I have the ability to choose a different interpretation every time the interpretation I choose leads to a negative emotion. What would that be like? The text goes on. You, therefore, beloved friends, are already as I am. We merely work together to restore your mind, to restore to your mind what the Creator has placed there since before the beginning of time. We work together in joy and in innocence and in perfect simplicity to recall, to remember what is true always. And then we work together to explore the explanation of that truth beyond the boundaries of every fearful thought, beyond the limitations of every egoic perception, beyond even the body itself, which can be only a temporary communication device, usable only within the very thin slice of creation that you call the physical world. Again, those last few lines are exactly what we're trying to expose people to in the support group last night. We have a set of five senses that can only register a tiny fraction of what's actually going on in the world around us. Our senses don't see infrared or ultraviolet or gamma rays, or our senses don't see gravity. Our senses don't hear what a lot of other animals can hear. Sounds, vibrations, energies are out there that are not visible to us. They're not audible to us. They're so subtle that we can't register them on a sensory level or physical touch level. And beyond that, even if we could have complete, total access to everything that hits our senses, and if our mind or conscious logical mind had enough processing power to access that for us moment to moment, we'd still be just getting a tiny fraction of what exists in the world. But it's far more than that. We only register the tiniest fraction of the energies that are hitting our senses. And there are human beings, and have been for thousands of years, who explore the limits, push the limits, do trainings, practices, whether they're spiritual or scientific or religious, energetic, whether it's a martial arts, using the chi or prana or life energy. They've been pushing the limits, sharing and showing others that we're only tapping into a tiny fraction of 1% of what is possible for human beings. So this last paragraph says, let's remind ourselves of how limited we are in our what we call the physical world experience. Let's listen to someone who's calling to us from another level of experience and saying, you, therefore, beloved friends, are already where I am. We need merely work together to restore to your mind what the Creator has placed there since before the beginning of time. We work together in joy and in innocence and in perfect simplicity to recall, to remember what is true always. And then we work together to explore the explanation of the truth that's beyond the boundaries of every fearful thought, beyond the limitations of every egoic perception, beyond even the body itself. And your body can only be a temporary communication device that is usable only within the very thin slice of creation that you call the physical world. Beloved friends, the way of transformation does indeed require your commitment. When you feel that your commitment has wavered, when you become aware of it, simply choose anew. Now, what it doesn't say there is notice how it feels when you choose negativity, when you beat yourself up, when you choose thoughts of hopelessness. Notice that and ask yourself, what do you prefer? Do you prefer the neutral recognition, the discernment? Oh, I've been stuck in negative thoughts for a while. I really don't prefer that. I'll choose anew. Or do you jump into the pile of thoughts that says, I'll bet Sam didn't get derailed like this. I'll bet Larry has been doing his practice, you know, without any faltering over the last 90 days. I bet I'm the only one in the listens to the Mindshifter radio that's screwed up so badly. Am I doing that with my thoughts? And am I willing to step back, take a breath, and assess for myself, do I prefer how that feels? Or would I prefer to extend that loving energy that is my true nature to myself in this moment, to be nurturing, to be supportive, to be respectful, and then take a breath and maybe chuckle, maybe giggle, maybe play and dance a little, and then choose anew. Beloved friends, the way of transformation does indeed require your commitment. It's not going to force you to make that commitment, but if you want to move into something new, you have to start doing things differently. And where and whenever you feel your commitment has wavered, when you become aware of it, simply breathe, soften, be gentle with yourself, be loving, be nurturing, be supportive, and choose again to return your awareness to the truth that is true always. If you choose to do that, the end of your journey is perfectly certain. For as you have created your journey away from your Creator, in your imagination, so too do you imagine or bring into the form of images the very pathway that returns you to your true reality. So now we embark on the next lesson and study period in which you have the choice once again to become fully committed to heeding every word, to letting the vibration brought forth by that word to settle ever more deeply into the nervous system of the body. As it settles, likewise, into the depth of your mind and the depth of your heart. Therefore, fear not, for you are the creator of your journey home. You are the creator of all that you perceive. You are the one given the infinite power of the mind of God to see through the eyes of love, to rest in perfect safety, and to embrace all that comes to you in the simple reality that you have called it to you, as a challenge perhaps, but always as an opportunity to expand your commitment to love. Every moment of your life is another chance to choose to teach only love. And where love is chosen so that you want nothing else, you will see nothing else but a lovely world, infinite in dimension, sparkling in clarity, and radiant in beauty. You will look upon it and say, "Behold, this is very good." So, again, they stated it very explicitly here, what they've gave us as the first axiom on page 5 in this first lesson. And the first lesson, first axiom, it says, the first step in awakening is to allow into the mind this particular axiom of truth. Here it comes. Drum roll, please. Quote, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Close quotes. Here we are, 180 pages into the book, and it says, you are the one given the infinite power of the mind of the Creator to see through the eyes of love. You are the creator of your journey home. You are creator of all that you experience and you perceive. Everything that you have experienced, you have called to yourself. Perhaps as a challenge, but always as an opportunity to expand your commitment to the energy of creation, to your own existence, to the energies that gave you existence, your commitment to love. And where love is chosen so that you want nothing else but love, then you will see nothing but a lovely world, infinite in dimension, sparkling in clarity, radiant in beauty. And you will look upon it and you will say, behold, it is very good. Because these are the experiences that you have called to yourself. And you will be in that space of allowance and acceptance and surrender, which is the opposite of judgment. It has told us at various points in this work that judgment is the opposite of love. Judgment is the opposite of forgiveness. Judgment is a poison. All of these statements have been made. And we are encouraged throughout this work to engage in exercises that will expand our experience of life. you're talking about the book by somebody, Lizards Eat Butterflies. And he talks about how fascinating it is that we have 12 cranial nerves, and we have one cranial nerve for each of the five senses that we recognize: sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. So that means we've got seven other cranial nerves. Isn't it a good question? Shouldn't we explore a little bit? Is each of those other seven cranial nerves intended to be a resource port for us to experience other energies, other flows, other stimulation, other experiences? Well, we can't even open up to that if we think everything is just the way it is and we already know and that's all there is. If we can't see it or hear it or smell it or taste it or touch it or measure it, it doesn't exist. If we believe that, then we create the experience of that in our lives and we stay limited. But if we will open ourselves to questioning, we open ourselves to learning. I haven't said it in a while, so I'll say this. The way I distilled this out from several different teachers over the years was, the only way that I can actually learn something new is if I make myself subordinate to that from which I would learn. If I walk into a situation believing that I know what I know and how I know it and where I knew it from and how I came to be and that's all there is to it, I'm going to leave that situation knowing what I knew. But if I want to learn something new, I have to go in with open observation. And the first observation I need, a fundamental observation, is I need to be able to understand and observe directly that I don't know everything. As I sit here right now, after 48 years of doing therapy, I can say I know quite a bit about doing therapy with people and the field of psychology as it exists today. And yet, on a regular basis, if not weekly, at least once a month, somebody says to me, hey, do you know about this theory? Do you know about this technique? Do you know about this book? Have you read this author? And I haven't, never heard of it, even in my own field. But then if you start talking about culinary arts, or you start talking about watercolors, or you start talking about quantum physics, I know almost nothing of those areas. So if I make an honest observation, it's easy for me to directly observe, I don't know everything. And so here's the second observation that's a necessary requirement for me to learn something new. Since it's clear that I don't know everything, everything I think I know is only partially true, and perhaps even completely false. Perhaps even completely false means I can't count on the fact that what I know is going to be enough to protect me. Apologies, some device just went off. So I can't count on what I know is going to protect me or keep me safe or help me grow, because I don't know everything that there is to know. And if I'm hoping to learn, I need to put myself in a space where I'm open to learning. But if I go in thinking, listen, I know what I know, there's no opportunity for me to learn. Which is, you know, it's the root of so many of these arguments that we have. We had a lovely group of people together on Tuesday, and it was one of the most intense groups we've had in a long time, because there's a very hot-button topic out there, and everybody knows what they know, and everybody knows that their side is right and the other side is wrong. And every single person who gets upset in an argument or a discussion doesn't know what they're talking about. Because if they did, they wouldn't be upset. If they knew what the cause of their upset was, if they could see it all the way to the clear root of it, their upset would disappear. So we're being invited through the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery and the Guy Finley work and Michael Rice's work. Every worksheet, every reality management worksheet has a side on it where it says, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to use my life experience and the way it's registered in my brain to make up another story about how I'm right and the world around me is wrong. Especially when my story leaves me feeling any kind of hostility or fear. Guy Finley points out that we live in a culture that has trained us to believe that the more angry we are, the more we know we're right and people around us are wrong. And the angrier we get, the more certain we are that we're right and the people around us are wrong. And he points out rather quickly in that talk that my anger doesn't prove I'm right. My anger only proves I don't know what rightness is. And great teachers like Paramahansa Yogananda and Krishnamurti and dozens of others through the years have been telling us, if we have an upset, we do not understand what is going on within us. Because as soon as we see all the way to the heart of the cause of our upset will be dismantled. Because the truth of life is this flow of creation. And we are a part of it. We are a miracle of life expressing in form. And if we're experiencing ourselves as something less, as small and weak and overwhelmed, that is a creation of what we've been programmed into and our intellect, and it is changeable by us, not by the people around us, not by our teachers. You can have the very best teacher in the world, and she cannot change you if you want to hold on to your bitterness and your hurt and your resentment and your upset. We routinely have people, this happened again last night when we showed the video, and we had, you know, the idea that, people are sitting in their own homes or wherever they are, climate-controlled rooms, they're on their internet, and everybody is safe and as comfortable as they want to make themselves, and we're all watching the same sights and sounds, but we're not all receiving the same impressions. Routinely, when we would gather for the live groups for the first, I don't know how many years it has been, 16 or 17 years of the Tuesday support group, we would gather in person, and we would watch an hour of one of Dr. Michael Rice's videos. And on a regular basis, somebody would be in that room and say, I can't believe he's so negative. And everybody else in the room only heard Dr. Rice talk about love and being more loving and being more respectful. It's just like clockwork. New people would get triggered and have an entirely different experience of the very same video. And so last night we had another video, and a couple people spoke up and said, wow, I really like that. It really touched me. I really got into the exercise. And another person said, well, it felt like a show to me. It felt like, it was fake. It didn't resonate with me. I don't see the purpose of it. That's perfectly okay. It's just a good example of how each and every one of us is creating our experience of life. And when we create an experience of life that's unpleasant, if we realize we're the ones creating it, we can choose again. We can choose anew. And if I don't realize that, if I believe the conditioning, I'm stuck. One of the quotes that came to me a number of years ago was, My new definition for being stuck is anytime I'm experiencing a negative emotion, negative thought, negative emotion, I know instantly I'm stuck. My new definition for being hopelessly stuck is when I'm arguing for how I'm right to have this negative emotion, this negative thought. Because I'm the only one that can change it, and I change it by first releasing the attachment I have or the identification I have or the value I'm giving to the thought or belief or the energy that's creating the upset. If I'm not willing to let that go, if I'm not willing to change the focus of my thoughts, no one can do it for me. Not the world's greatest spiritual teacher, not the world's greatest psychologist. Try as she might, she won't be able to change what I hold on to within me. I've had the blessing over the years of having lots of people say to me, "Oh, Dr. Hayes, you've saved my life." And I just kind of chuckle and say, "You know what? That's a complete misrepresentation of what's gone on here." And if you knew how many people I shared the same tools with, the same types of observations, the same intense effort to do my best in a session, how many of those people left angry, dumped me after one session, came for three or four, and then blamed me for all the misery in their life, then you would clearly know how you're the one who's changing your life for the better, not me. I don't get credit for you making different choices in your life. And you making different choices in your life is the only thing that can lead you to a better, brighter, more loving, more joyful, more respectful experience of life. Nothing else will do it. Which is why we're reading The Way of Mastery. And as I pointed out, if you get the Kindle version of that, I challenge you. Just go ahead and search through there for words like choice, choose, choosing. It's amazing how many times those words are in just the first book alone. Because unlike any other kind of religion, unlike any kind of cult or any kind of politics, belief is not required. Adherence to some set of rules is not required. Observation is the only thing that's required. Observing the truth of how it's what you choose to do with your mental emotional resources, what Michael Rice calls the mind energy, that's what changes your experience of life and nothing else. So we're starting off first couple pages of the lesson 15 where love or fear, the choice is yours. And I thank you all for being here and listening. And as we head into this 3-day weekend, I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, and it's July the 1st, 2022. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and I'll direct you to our website, whyagain.org, and you can click on multiple things, and there's something new probably under just about every page. If you click on schedule, you'll see that there is the free 3-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that's actually a workshop just a few weeks back, so that's brand new. And it's out there for free. Then we've got the Codependence Communication Self-Study Intensive and the Global Book Club. And that meets, it meets quite often, but Michael is part of it on the 2nd and the 4th Thursday of each month. And so that'll be coming up on the 14th, the next time that he is on the book club. And then there's Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing monthly membership. And that one is usually the 2nd Saturday of the month. However, Michael's going to be out of town on the night, so we have bumped that out to July the 16th. And then, of course, the follow-up support meeting will be on July 19th instead of the 12th. So be part of any of that. And both the Google and Apple have approved the changes to the app. So get your up on that. Or if you haven't downloaded it at all, go to your app store and type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and it'll pop up with a glowing red heart, and download that for free. You can do 2 different worksheets. You can do the Dragon Klingon game. There are all of the commitments. There's a link for more, which we've been putting different things out there, just more information. There's also a link to events. And you can ask us a question on any page within the app. And so we invite you to download that and put it to work. It puts the forgiveness process right in your pocket all the time. And we invite you to use it. And then this show is here Monday through Friday to give you support. So you push a button, press 1, and ask your question. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here. As we step forward and go to the next level of this awesome conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools that have been developed over the last 50 years in working with these. Well, actually, it's only been about 40, 42 maybe, working with the Aramaic forgiveness process, but 50 years and all, putting it all together. And our objective, of course, is to make it as clear, as crystal clear, as useful as is absolutely possible, putting these tools into perspective in a way that offers support in living the truth. Thought I had, before coming to the show today, was there's a word, actually it's a, comes from a Greek word, gout, G-O-O-T, or G-O-O-T, I'm not sure, but, and that word has had one of the O's taken out of it, and has become a really controversial and in many circles hated word in our culture, the word that many use to probably use incorrectly to represent the Creator. And I was thinking on this topic and thinking the scriptural quotes that describe the Creator have very little to do with that which so many people hate. So many people give and or give lip service to and then go about doing whatever their generational patterns are, whatever their power person dynamics are, just play them out without regard for truth or the presence of love. And so the thought came, you know, we should probably totally, completely eradicate this word, G-O-D, and go back to what that word is described in those ancient teachings, in that ancient wisdom literature. The words describe what that word really means. And it's interesting. Three key words keep showing up: truth, love, and spirit. So what if we eradicated the word truth, or pardon me, eradicated the word God? Just a mental exercise. With the fact that there's so much violence and viciousness that's been done in the Creator's name, so many lies told, so much trauma by people who inappropriately utilize the name of the Creator as though the Creator were behind what they were thinking or doing, or that they had any concern whatsoever. Oh, there's lots of lip service. But as to actually living it, well, so what would it be like if we realized that we were made in the image and likeness of the Creator? And that would mean, if we took one of those words, it would mean we were spiritual beings, not physical beings, not mental beings, not emotional beings, but spiritual beings. And then there's a really clear, crisp, and John seems to be the one who got this on the deepest level from Yeshua. It's about the Creator is love. So those words would be interchangeable. And so often people have got so many fraudulent dedications to the Creator and all kinds of stories about how much they love God and and at the slightest provocation have no concern whatsoever for truth, have no concern whatsoever for their spiritual nature's love, have no concern whatsoever for the active presence of love. They'd rather do their trauma, their rage, their hate, their vengeance, their pain, their generational patterns, their power person dynamics. So what if we eradicated that and just every time we talked about the Creator, everybody knew we're talking about active present love. Everybody knew we're talking about honoring truth. To honor truth is to honor the Creator. And to recognize that the bottom line is, if we are made in the image and likeness of love, then it's time for us to realize that if we are experiencing and feeling something that's less than love, it's time for us to get off our duffs and do some work. As opposed to fly off into a rage with no honor of truth whatsoever. And of course, if one has no honor of truth, no honor of love, no honor of their spiritual nature, what becomes their God? Blame. It's all somebody else's fault. The conversation's all about how it's your fault. When do we wake up to the truth and start to honor truth and recognize, you know, there's a bottom line principle. If your mind is generating a perceptual construct based in hostility or fear, you're living in a lie. There's no truth in it. Yeshua talked to people 2,000 years ago, and this isn't about theology. This isn't a theological or religious concept. It's just, how does your mind work? How does your life work? Does it work? And if it doesn't work, are you willing to own, stop having conversations about everybody else and actually own? Gee, a revelation. If something's moving inside of me, it's moving inside of me. When do I stop the conversation about everybody else and how it's all their fault? And oftentimes do that supposedly in the name of God. It's time for a wake-up call. Fidelity to truth is important. And most people love their lies, and their hostility and fear are simply indicators of their lies, and they'll go on and on and on and destroy anything or anybody that gets in the way. A mind producing a construct based in hostility or fear is producing a construct based in a lie, and most people love their lies. You can tell by how often they tell their lies. And you'll notice if they're really committed to it, virtually every time they're under stress, they go into the lie. They have no interest in truth whatsoever. I've been thinking about watching A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood again. It was such a profound and powerful film where the gentleman whose life was ultimately transformed as a result of his relationship with the star of the show, his basic bottom line was an attempt to shut his teacher up. Don't make me look. If I look, I will find something in me that I don't want to look at. So understanding how the mind works, if we're honoring our mind's lies, again, anything based in hostility or fear, if we're puking that all over somebody, and truth shows its face, stress is going to go up in that mind. And the more stress goes up, the more people will demonstrate exactly what their God is. And if they haven't done their own inner work, of course, their God is hostility and fear. And the thesis of their lives is blame. It's all your fault. We have an alternative to that. I should take responsibility, actually own what's going on. Oh, this is moving inside of me. Now that I realize this is moving inside of me, I can stop my conversation about you and I can start to have a conversation about me. This is moving inside of me. This is what I need to deal with. As opposed to all the convincing lies, all the projections about how the internal dynamic is put into one's brain's image of another with no honor of truth whatsoever. I mentioned a week or two ago, Carl Jung, and Carl Jung talked about man is a religious being. You can't get away from it. And I'm not talking about the stuff that passes as theology today, but basically his way of explaining it was that we have to have a central principle by which we live. Every human being has to have that. He referred to it as a myth, a central myth. And there was a time when those ancient teachings presented and promoted the central myth. You're made of this stuff called love. You're designed to live as love. And when you're not, you have work to do. And so many people have given lip service to that or fallen away from anything to do with that so completely. Oh, yes, they'll still give it lip service, blah, 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 blah. But when the stress is up and the chips are down, you know who their God really is. And it's not anything other than recognizing, is that where you want to live? It's not about, oh, look how terrible you are, because it's just, is that where you want to live? Is that really what you want? Are you willing to do the hard work? Are you willing to have the hard conversations that you're going to need to have with yourself in order to clean that out? And there are just so many, I mean, quote after quote after quote. I was looking at them this morning. You know, Spirit of Truth comes and will guide you all into all the truth. The Creator is love. Yeshua says, I'm the truth. Became flesh, full of grace and truth. Teach me, Creator, that I may walk in your truth. What is the truth? Well, when you realize, we'll go back to some of the basic why is this happening to me again work, when you realize that this piece of Harvard research gives us some really profound information. It tells us that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, you know, they've got people hooked up to electrodes and they're measuring brain cell firings, and that individual's brain in that same time frame is able to construct a perception based in 9 bits of data out of 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity. It's been estimated in that same time frame, approximately 20 trillion bits of data potentially available. The 20 trillion bit world is truth. You got a 9-bit mind. Truth is based in love. It's not based in your hostility or your fear. And it's not somebody else's fault that you're experiencing it. And sooner or later, you got to have the hard conversation of going inside and saying, what's this inside of me? What is it that I need to deal with? And you can pretend that you don't have to do that. Francois Fenelon, a quote we've used several times, has given us a view, and this is written 300 years ago, has given us a view of what it means, what you're going to have to do. And if you haven't done this, don't kid yourself that you know the truth. What you're going to have to look at, what you're going to have to process through, what you're going to have to stop blaming on everybody else, and you're going to have to confront dead center in your own physiology and in your own genes and bring a change to it. So when we start to connect with love, we start to connect with light. Here's what Francois says. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness. As we see, if you're in hostility or fear and you're talking about somebody else, you're in blindness. If you are going to honor truth, you got to start to recognize that. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed sweet little old me would harbor such things. And we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. The person who can't honor truth has a conversation about everybody else when those things start to appear in their minds, and therefore cannot free themselves of it, but are in the grip of it, and they're in the question of, why is this happening to me again? Why are they doing this to me again? Why are all people the same? Why are they like that? Without recognizing that it's all projection. Truth will write its meaning in your mind if you're available to it. But if you're not willing to honor it to rewrite and remove your pain, it can't do it until you're willing to honor truth. So Fenelon goes on and says, we never could have believed that we harbored such things, that we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we're filled with horror. You are going to be filled with horror when you start to look at what's inside of you. And if you haven't looked at it, if you've been able to dance through the fairies and pretend that, oh, you're this God-realized being and everything's fine and there's nothing for you to deal with, and when something comes up that's painful, it's all somebody else's fault and your conversation's about them, stop lying to yourself that you got any interest in truth and that you've even started to do your work. This work calls to a deep, deep space of willingness to honor truth, willingness to recognize yourself as love, and when something different's coming out of your mouth, stop it, shut it, and get to work. And oftentimes it's going to be those generational patterns, sometimes based in religion, or what was called religion, that was pounded into you. That's going to have to be processed through. That's going to be part of those, you know, a reflection of those, what Fenelon calls those filthy reptiles. Bear in mind, he says, and you know, it's a comfort line in here, bear in mind for your comfort that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. Other people go stark raving mad, raging at everybody, and have no concept of truth. But as we move along the path, there's a higher standard that needs to be engaged. Jung talks about the collective psychosis that's greater than all physical dangers and the tremendous effects of delusional ideas, which are yet denied all reality in our world-blinded consciousness. Our much-vaunted reason, he says, and our boundlessly overestimated will are sometimes utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. And so if you recognize unreal thoughts, and there's pain and trauma about unreal thoughts, the work is that of shifting to the presence of love in you and beginning an inquiry into what you need to work through rather than puking it all on somebody else. It means there are going to be hard conversations and a willingness to stay in those conversations is a requirement. When the stress becomes too much, people want to shut it down and throw it away. You know, watch the character in Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Don't make me look. You want to look because what you're not looking at is your disease. What you're not wanting to own, what you're not wanting to work through, is ultimately the only thing that can kill us. Carl Jung had another way of reflecting this idea of phenolons. He called it the wolf inside. And he said this wolf is far more a threat to human existence than any kind of external forces. You know, if you're concerned, if you're upset about war in Ukraine and the political situation and this and that and that, that pales by comparison to the wolf that wants to bite off somebody else's head because it's in total projection and is not available for truth to enter and rewrite, overwrite, dissolve, and remove the pain. And we're seeing the effect of that today. Jung predicted this decades ago. When mental forces become so toxic as to harm our overall well-being on individual and collective level, a psychic epidemic can result. And he warned about a pandemic, nothing to do with the virus. Although it's interesting, Jeannie and I watched Inception the other night again, and the character in Inception asks the question, what is the most contagious thing in the world? And once it's landed, how do you get rid of it? The most contagious thing is an idea. And Carl Jung said that society was prone to collapse due to a pandemic of delusional ideas. We're seeing a lot of that in our world today, in this and many other countries. Delusional ideas, personal level, within family systems, within the country, within the globe. So Jung talked about how if you don't have a basic story, a basic myth to live by, or you mouth one that was fed to you by your religion, but when it comes down to it, you know, forget it. If you given that and you are true to it, you will clean up your mind totally. And so this central myth, people make up and get lost in it, because the mind produces constructs that reflect the content of the mind. And there's a work to be done. Our invitation is to pick up the tools and do that work. And know that we're doing it right here alongside of you, day by day by day. And that we're delighted to offer any support or understanding that we have that will expand your process and your understanding. It's the whole purpose of what we're doing here. So it's a delight to have the space to open this conversation. And Ms. Jeannie, do you have any thoughts to add?
Nope, I don't. And
well,
we don't
have
any hands
in the phone
up.
Queue with a hand up?
No hands up and no comments in the chat room. So if somebody presses 1, you are first in line with no waiting.
We can have a conversation. And I can only imagine with that covering that series of ideas, there have to be, geez, who doesn't have a thought to share? Who doesn't have a question? Who doesn't want a refinement? Who doesn't have a refinement to offer? I can only imagine that if I'd been on a stage and presented that in your hometown and you were in the audience and I walked down off the stage, you come over and say, Michael, well, what about? And the idea of this show is to create the space for your what about. So what's on your mind? Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you on our control panel, is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show live. And then if you push 1, hand goes up in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to talk to us. So let's have a conversation. What's on your mind? Push 1. Let's talk about it. Or we could just do a half-hour silent meditation, I guess. We're out this morning once again working in the garden and putting some finishing touches on the garden structures, watching the tomato trees that are still quite young and immature, but they're up over 5 feet, which is kind of cool. The squash leaves are 20 inches wide. It's pretty amazing. All right, let's say hello.
Miss Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hey. Hello, friend.
Welcome, young lady.
Hey.
How do you be?
Thank you so much. Pretty well. I do have some questions, but I have them anyway. They're about Jacob, my grandson. And
how can we support you with him today?
Well, thanks. He keeps writing to me that he thinks he's ruined his voice and his memory is no good, and he's at this summer theater program and he's just struggling very badly with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Seems unenthusiastic. He says a lot of the material he's getting is like material from before. And I've been going to Al-Anon because he has this, I think he's a rageaholic, as his dad was, and
yes,
I've gotten one thing Al-Anon says is picture you having a tug of war with the person who's using. Just drop the rope. What a wonderful image that is, instead of pulling and fighting. Drop the rope, and if they get ugly, just say, look, things aren't going so well. I need to go. Let's talk later. Don't even say anything like, you're getting mad. Don't even address
their game's got to change if you drop your end of the rope, for sure.
It's totally weird. The first Al-Anon meeting I went to, I kept thinking of you because you teach all this. And hearing it from just the angle of addiction is very helpful. But one thing they said that I was fascinated with is they want to use and they feel badly about using, so they need an excuse to use. So they needle you until you blow, and then they say, I'm going to go use because you are, you pulled the
look
rug out.
Look what you've done to me.
I know.
Well, that's
so,
the whole first half of the program. There's the conversation.
Oh, my God. I know. That's the thing. And so we're having very different kinds of dialogues, and it has freed me up. If he brings up something that's accusing, I don't even pay attention to it. I don't defend myself. I don't say you're doing this.
Just
or
not
that,
playing
or,
in that realm.
I'm not. All I do is distract. I just say, how was the show you worked on yesterday? Something completely different, and immediately his tone changes. And he'll answer the question like nothing happened. What is that? It's like a kind of amnesia. He doesn't stay on his own rage track. He's gone off of it. He'll just answer the question. And we can talk for a while, and then he may try to get a reason to. He has been sober from weed, vaping weed, for 4 or 5 days now. And he's been telling me that his voice is even worse, and he's coughing up mucus. And I click right into Michael Rice. I said, you're in a healing crisis. This is the best thing. Your cords realize that they're not being attacked anymore, and so they're beginning to produce what they need to produce and detox. I'm making it up, Michael.
Perfect.
Making it up based on what you say. Just hang in there. Don't go back and use just because you're having no immediate results. You're on a good track. And I don't know what I'm talking about, but it sounds really good.
Well, you know exactly
okay.
what you're talking about. You've been around the conversation long enough. But what I hear is he's given you another opening to support him. He has concern about his mind, about his voice, and it sounds like about his health. So there's another perfect opening to offer him support in, well, you know, and you know, maybe do some research and send him some information about the impact of things like drugs and alcohol on voice and on the functioning of the mind. And there's a way to get it back. You can detox yourself. You can change the game, and you can tune up, and you can strengthen your voice, and you can strengthen your mind and your mental function. But the road you're traveling, well, you're right. You're destroying it, and that's your own act of volition, and you might want to choose a different direction. So it sounds like it could be another opening for
it is.
A different
it feels
conversation.
Like an opening. Yeah, anyway.
Remember the section on the course that talks about words, the words of the world of darkness that mean nothing, and they're basically the words of the world of hostility and fear. And that particular passage, you've heard me read it a couple of times because it's the most impactful part of the course that I've ever tapped into. And it says, it would be interesting if you were instructed to stop using the words of the world for a while and then were asked to take a teaching function. And then you go back to the world of darkness using the words of the world of darkness, but not because you believe them real, but only to prove their unreality in terms that still have meaning in that world of darkness. And that's a big part of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so to speak about his fear and about his voice or about his mind, it's like, well, son, there's a way to detox that and get yourself back on track and get back sharp. And to bring your physiology up, you know, starting to pay attention to what you're eating and starting to pay attention to what you're putting into your body. And there are things that are known to destroy them. So, you know, I mean, it's your choice. You get to do whichever you like, but you might want to really think about making some different choices.
Right. I'm going very slowly along those lines. In fact, I thought of you. He said, I feel so bad about my voice, and I'm so depressed. And I said, just breathe into that feeling. That's a real feeling. Don't push it away and run from it. I'm pulling out all your tools, and I'm just saying, allow it. It'll pass much more quickly if you look at it and allow it, and just be gentle with yourself. So far,
there's another invitation.
Huh?
There's another invitation there that I hear, too. I say there's another invitation that I'm hearing in those words that you just shared that he's spoken to you. And that is that depression, you know, to start to instruct him. You notice how often you break into a rage with the people around you. Well, when you turn that same energy inward, that's what depression is.
Mm-hmm.
And that might give him another reason to start to address and work through his rage rather than whoever happens to be handy, he can puke it all over them. That's what the non-being mind does. There's no ability in the non-being mind to say, oh, I have this moving inside of me, and therefore I have some work to do. Gee, I puked on you, and I'm gonna apologize for that, and I'm gonna come up with what I'm ready to do, what I'm willing to do in replacement as a replacement to that. And so there might be another incentive there for him to recognize that, you know, when he pukes his rage outward, that's one thing. But when he's not doing that and turns it inward, that's exactly what his depression is. And he's got to do some work to stop doing that in both directions, to free himself of the impact of it. He obviously doesn't like his depression. You know, he probably feels a great deal of relief when he rages at someone around him, because it's a very powerful, rage is a very powerful anesthetic.
I'm taking notes.
And so to... to start to let go of the anesthetic and become conscious of, you know, recognize there are goals and thoughts behind it that you need to clean up, and you can turn them outward, or you can turn them inward, or you could start to heal them. But, you know, and there's a way to do it. And, you know, you might want to go there if you want to recoup your voice and your brain and your life. You know, you're a young man. You've got a whole life ahead of you. Do it with the full faculties rather than, you know, the culture's taught you how to destroy yourself with rage, with self-deprecation, with drugs, with alcohol. And, you know, I'm here to support you picking a different path and, you know, and recognizing it's not going to be easy. There's going to be work to be done because there are addictions involved. And, you know, with that addiction, the compulsive use of whatever it is, person, place, thing, substance, circumstance, or activity, to keep from hearing and following one's highest guidance and to keep from feeling and communicating with and dealing with what's going on inside. And it's time to start to shift the game. But you don't shift the game by just puking on everybody every time you turn around, or puking on yourself when there's nobody handy and you go into these depressive moods.
Boy.
Got to learn some different skills.
Is Jeannie saying something? I thought I heard Jeannie's voice.
I don't think so.
Nope, not me.
Oh.
Okay. I would love to be able to speak as plainly and lucidly as you do. But I'm telling you, Michael, I have a sense that I have to go very slowly, but I love to use the word opening, because that's what I'm looking for, these little kinks. And I can go in there, but I stay very loose. Like, I haven't addressed his using except to say, you've made it this far, and look at the progress. And it's wonderful because your throat is now producing all this mucus. Those are healing elements.
It's a good thing.
Michael, I don't know that. It's a good thing. And I did promise him, I said, if you hang in this way, when you get here, and you may not even need it, but when you get here, we'll find a good specialist and have a look at that throat again, having been clean for a while. And he said, yeah, maybe that would be a good thing. And I said, so don't rip the Band-Aid off. Just wait. You know,
Excellent idea.
Give yourself a chance. So that's in the plan too. But the thing that's immediately good is that he isn't fighting with me all the time. He isn't defending, or he isn't raging, knock on wood. And I know my strategy if he does, but I haven't needed to use anything like that because I've been just dropping the rope and changing the subject, and he is distracted and off in another direction. So useful. So there's that report. And the other question is for Jeannie. And it's also naturopathic in nature. And that is, Jeannie, I hope it's okay to discuss this on the radio show. I think you mentioned it on the show, so I guess it's okay.
Sure.
You said you're taking bioidentical hormones.
Yeah.
And I am too, just because I have a naturopathic MD friend who thought this might help with insomnia, beginning with that, but with other things. So she had me get a lot of blood work. Now, number one, did you get a lot of blood work to start, sort of
yes.
as a baseline?
And yes.
do you get
and,
blood work every once in a while?
I go every 6 months, and they retest, and they look for, well, they also check my cholesterol and sugar and things like that, too, but they check for the testosterone, the progesterone, and the estrogen. And because a lot of physicians will only prescribe, like, estrogen, but you need all three.
Yeah.
See, I had a total hysterectomy in 96, so I don't generate any of my own hormones. So I've been taking the bioidentical, and we actually have a compounding pharmacy here, so they make it, the strength and everything based on what the doctor says, based on the blood work. So, you know, they check it, and most of the time they don't have to change it, but once every now and then, you know, they'll either up something or decrease something, or they'll add DHEA to it, and, you know, to keep it in balance. But, yeah, it's you know, I'm thankful that our physician is so holistic because, like one time, you know, my cholesterol was out, my sugar was high. I mean, there was just lots of things going on, and my hormones were out of balance. And he said, you know, okay, let's get your hormones back in balance. He said, and the other will take care of itself. And
interesting.
So, you know, they impact everything, your metabolism,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so, yeah.
So interesting. But do you have any side effects?
No, I don't. I mean, a good side effect. No negative ones.
I have some negative ones, and I've gone way down on my dose. And my physician had to have a neck operation, and she's out of commission. So all the blood work I did after, this is the second 6 month stretch I had all the blood work, it's gone into her, but she's not responding. And so I'm just sort of hanging out, but anyway, I don't know which way to go on it, but there are a couple of negative side effects, and I'm wondering if it means I should really go down even more on my own and just wait. Not sure, but anyway, how would you know? You can't know that. But I do know we have a compounding person in Kansas. We're sending the prescription all the way out to there, and they send us the compounds, these little lozenges.
You might call them then. If you can't get a hold of your physician, call the pharmacist, the compounding pharmacist, and tell him, you know, what side effects you're having. And they can probably, you know, just tell them that your physician is out of commission right now. And, you know, they could probably make an adjustment or, you know, contact the physician's nurse or whatever and get permission to adjust the prescription. That's a great
idea. You
could,
perhaps. You know, we have an MD. He isn't a naturopath, but he functions like one. You know, his first thought is rather than what pill can I give you is what's going on in your life that you need to deal with. But perhaps we could get your blood work sent to him and do a consultation with him if you have no other option there. He's really on top of it.
Wow, that sounds great. I'll look into the first one, and if I get no luck, I might ask you and see if he would take me as a sort of consult patient or something. That would be really good.
I suspect at our request he would. He's a friend, and so I'm quite reasonably sure he would be happy to do that. And before we found him, Jeannie did really get a lot of good support from her compounding pharmacist, who was, I think, was out in California originally, was he in?
Yes. Wow.
So either way, we're certainly here to offer support, and if you need that consultation, we'll ask if it's possible.
Guys, again, that's what you're doing. So I have another question. It's about The Chosen. Have you finished watching the seasons that are up so far?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
No, actually, we need to get back to it maybe tonight.
I know you watch a lot of different things, and I finished what's available, but there are a lot of clips of commentaries, discussions with theologians and so forth, and also little documentaries about the making of this, that, or the other scene. And then I heard an interview with Jonathan Romey, I think that's how you pronounce his name, the man who plays Jesus. And he told the most incredible story. He was in a restaurant just hanging out, and the woman came up to him and bent over and said, "Are you Jonathan Romey?" And he said, "Yes." And she sunk to her knees and took hold of his arm and buried her head into the crook of his arm and cried hard. And her husband was standing some distance away, shifting one foot to the other and feeling awkward and grinning a little bit nervously. And then she looks up and she says, "I know that you're an actor, and I'm not crazy, but your acting that part has brought so much of my faith back to me. And my husband and I are about to go to the court and try to get our two children back. They've been taken from us in custody." She didn't go into why, but she said, "We're on our way there. And we stopped to eat. And here you are. You're like a gift from God and a message that everything will be okay." So she is. That's so gorgeous. I mean, she really was able
Sweet.
To see that he's an actor, but she got what he had to give, and he talks about what it's like to act that part and how much it has done for him and how humbled he is by it. And I just think even watching it, even my daughter, who's been a priest for years, says, "I feel I have a much more immediate, visceral, alive relationship with Jesus now. And I know that it's just an actor, but somehow something is coming through." And the other gorgeous thing is, maybe I was talking about this on the radio show the other day, one of the scenes they wanted to do is the feeding of the 5,000. Tell me if I've told you about this, how they just put out the word and people from
no,
all
we
over
haven't
the
heard
country
it.
Came. It's so gorgeous. People from all over the country came. Obviously, they'd been told to fit themselves out with a biblical-looking costume. They were in some desert area in Texas. They arrive in busloads, more than 5,000. I think he said there were 10,000 people who came from all over, dressed in biblical garb, taking care of themselves, not needing any, you know, the producers to do anything for them. And they interviewed a few of these people randomly, and they all said, "Yep, I've been changed by this. Whatever is going on politically, climate-wise, everything, this message is universal, completely uniting both groups to the point where we don't need to discuss any of that. We come together, and the love is unbelievable, just the love among us and the willingness to work together and the experiences we're having. It's amazing." And I do think what's happening there is it's like one of the scenes where Jesus is healing, and I did talk to you about this, how he was healing people at a distance, and his disciples were the thing that were being filmed, and how they bickered with each other, and they were fidgety, and they were bored, and they couldn't wait till he finished healing people so they could get him back and they could go about their business. And they're bickering like regular people. And he comes back and not a word is said, but the bickering stops. It's like something takes them out of that whole bipartisan mess and allows them to be in active, conscious, present love again. It's as if we don't have to fix it. We really can't fix it on that level at all. It takes us out into the realm where we are totally unseparated again. We're together. I just think this is a miraculous series that's being done. We can't even imagine the impact it's going to have. I really think it's a divine intervention of some sort. Anyway, I know I'm really talking big here. So, yeah. And I've finished
powerful.
It.
Can you remind me?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Complete.
Okay, well, I'm just sort of yammering. I could just, it's pure enthusiasm you're hearing, kind of.
I got it. Well, one of the things you remind me of, there was an actor, and I don't even remember who he is right now. This goes back a few years. And he was in a TV series, and he was playing a guy who had cancer. And he got cancer. And he left the TV series.
Say it again, Michael. Sorry. Something about cancer. I missed it. Say again.
Yeah. It was an actor, and I'm not even remembering what his name is. Maybe Jeannie will. She oftentimes remembers things like that that I don't. But he had cancer.
Yeah.
He's playing in the TV series, a man who has cancer. He gets cancer. He leaves the TV series,
God.
I don't know, for a year or so, and it heals himself. And so they hire him back, and he goes back to play the TV series, back to play the actor who's got cancer. And sure enough, it's not long before he's got cancer again, and he's dead. You know, remember the opening words in the book of John, don't say in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. If you assume a certain mind energy role, it literally changes literally the chemistry in your physiology.
That's so amazing, yeah.
And so,
well, it's like
I can see that, you know, with a sincere interest in playing that part, how transformative it would be to really fully assume the mantle of that role. It would be powerful.
Right. And when he was in, Jonathan Rumi was in the restaurant, he was taken aback like a regular person. And his first impulse, he said, he didn't know what to do. And then he thought, this woman is addressing me as if I'm that character. I must be that character for her. And he settled right into it. He gave up his own smaller self or his ego or whatever it was and realized he had a job to do right then, was be that person, that Jesus character for her. And he was able to know exactly what to do. It is like putting on a garment or stepping into something that we don't know even what we're doing. It's just a choice. It's an amazing permission we have that we don't even know we have to become something else if we want to. And not by stepping in.
Yeah, it's not by figuring it out. But it is, and we've spoken about it many times, where we talk about being the space.
Yeah.
When you choose to be the space where healing is facilitated and you allow yourself to be guided, remember there is a teacher in you, the real teacher, the one that we're here to support and hook you up with and to be hooked up with ourselves, and that teacher's within us. And when we move into that space, it transforms everything.
Totally. There's a woman I deal with in my life who I find very difficult. And so this morning I was doing my worksheet. As I was walking, I was doing the mental worksheet, walking the dog. And I didn't even get very far. My mind said to me, and the mind is the mind of Christ. This is the mind of Christ saying, bless her. Just bless her. You don't have to like it. Just bless her. immediately everything changed. It changed. I didn't have to love or feel good about, but somehow the whole contentious, tight feeling just went away. And Pradovan, Tim Hayes talks about Pierre Pradovan and his gentle art of blessing. That comes to mind more and more often these days as a way of going to the enlightened goal and bypassing a goal of having them act a certain way or be a certain way or do a certain thing. And I don't mean to invite people to bypass that, but as a shortcut when you're in trouble, it's a good thing.
Well, and, you know, taking time each day to cultivate the ability to be that space, take time each day to cultivate your relationship with the truth of who you are as love. And as that practice, you know, that's the other one half of the practice is the forgiveness work. The other half of the practice is cultivating your relationship with yourself as love. And as mm-hmm. that becomes the practice, it gets easier and easier to call on that energy and to shift out of, you know, the genetic advisor that says, ah, we should just puke on them or whatever.
Yeah.
So right on track.
Oh, yeah, it feels that way. So in spite of all that, Michael, I have a big cold sore. Comment, please.
Ouch. Well, you know, skin eruptions are released. The skin, the largest eliminative organ in the body is the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your body is releasing through the skin, cooperate with it.
Not much you can
go,
do.
You know, we talked the other day
out.
About, say again?
Not much to be done with a cold sore except wait, I guess.
Right. Well, and, you know, we had the conversation the other day about different qualities of food, congestors, eliminators,
yeah.
You know, shift into a more eliminative diet and cooperate with your body's desire to eliminate, to throw off what doesn't belong. And there can be an imbalance between arginine and lysine when that tends to flare up, and supplementing with some lysine can be helpful too.
You know, you're the third person that's mentioned that, and I've got to go get some because I take stuff, but I don't think that's in anything I'm taking. Yeah.
Probably worthwhile support.
Yeah.
It's cheap.
Good. That's nice.
Cool. Well, any other thoughts for you? We're now to the last minute or so.
No, that's it. You listened to a whole raft of them then, so thank you.
All right, dear heart, we cherish you.
Thanks. Cherish you too, both you
All right.
guys.
Okay, appreciate it. Blessings. Everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You can give it. Thanks for being with us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.